The 2013 NHL season is now officially halfway finished, and as always, we at Pucked in the Head have several things to say. Hopefully, they'll be interesting. Doubtfully, they'll be intelligent, but either way, they'll probably be entertaining. All right, I'm a little out of practice with this whole podcasting thing, as Chris, we've done, I believe, 3 episodes so far this season.
We're not keeping up with our goals, are we?
No, we are not. However, we're here now, so let's just celebrate that and get on with it. So, Chris Withers, nice to have you here.
Always good to be here, Jason.
During today's taping, I'm wearing a brand new scarf in about 15 different colors of blue with a little bit of gray and white thrown in. There's a splash of red as well. For the Vancouver Southsiders, a support group for the Vancouver Whitecaps, I am now officially a member.
Welcome to the club, Jason. And there are 2 varieties of blue on that scarf.
It feels like about, 17.
All right.
But no, it's lovely. It's wonderful. It's nice and warm, actually. I don't know if I'll wear it for the entirety of the podcast, but it is Whitecaps Wednesday in Vancouver.
Indeed it is.
Just a little sidestep to some soccer talk. And this season, for our regular listeners, if there are indeed any left, we will have the occasional bit of soccer talk on our podcast, and we definitely have some soccer on our website.
Indeed. We have just taken a visit to the future and seen how this weekend's game is going to go.
Well, according to EA Sports, it's in the game. Do they still use that in the game?
I think they do, yes.
The Whitecaps' win streak will stop at 2.
Yes.
And Joseph Cannon will almost certainly not play in the 4th game of the season.
That is correct.
After giving up a rather weak winning goal.
That is correct. But anyways, onwards to hockey.
Yes. A couple of things. First of all, the Vancouver Giants, their season is fini.
And they have retained the first overall Bantam draft pick.
So we'll start with some positives. Huzzah! We'll start with some positives. Yes, they had 6 balls in the bubble, as it were, for the lottery, for the first overall pick of the Bantam draft. But that number's a little bit misleading, because even though a number of teams have lottery balls in play, every team can only move up to a maximum of 2 places.
Right.
So essentially, for the first overall pick, the Giants had 12 balls out of 21.
Right. Indeed, the Regina Pats won the draft lottery this year. However, they are not eligible to move up into first.
Yeah, they moved from 4th to 2nd. Right. So Vancouver retained the first overall pick. And they've got a number of really good young players coming in anyway. As we saw on the website, I did a mini profile on Alec Bear from Minnesota. They've also got Jacob Stuckel, who's coming in.
Stuckel,
yes. S-T-U-K-E-L. Usually when the Bantam players come in for their 6-game tryout at the WHL level, they are wearing a full face shield. Because at that level of hockey, it's still mandatory for them to wear the full face shield.
Mm-hmm.
So my pictures of Jacob Stuckel earlier in the year really stand out because he's wearing the full metal cage.
Right.
Quite a dramatic sight on the ice when you're the only one on the ice wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good thing they do that. These are 15-year-olds playing against 20-year-olds in some cases.
Well, I mean, everybody should wear them, really. There's evidence that they reduce concussions, blah, blah, blah. We've talked about this before.
Well, and they're talking about it at the National Hockey League level.
Right, so, yeah. The Board of Governors meeting is, what is it, on right now, or is it this week?
As we are recording this, it's on. By the time people get this podcast available to them, it will be
complete.
Apparently, that's pretty much the only thing that's gained any traction is pushing to have the NHLPA give their players a vote this summer on whether or not to grandfather mandatory visor usage.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the NHL giveth and the NHL taketh away because they're trying to reduce the size of goalie pads, which a lot of critics are saying is going to open certain types of goaltenders up to more injuries, especially around the knees.
It all depends on what the competition committee finds out and the safety committee, and there's going to be a lot of work that goes into it. The NHL Board of Governors doesn't have the kind of power that it used to,
yeah.
And the GM meetings don't have as much cachet as they used to. All they can do is make recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, one thing that's not gaining any traction is a hybrid icing call. And we talked about that a little while ago. I'll try to throw it on the end of next episode's podcast.
Sure. Is it up for discussion at all?
It was on the agenda from all reports at this point. It hasn't gained any traction whatsoever.
Hmm.
So it doesn't make any sense to me. It's such an easy change to make. We saw it successfully used at the American Hockey League level.
Yep.
And it really doesn't take anything away from the game.
No, you still get the chases for the puck.
And you get added player safety. And it's one that even the players won't be able to grumble about as they will with smaller goalie gear or with visor usage or something like that. Or for some reason, some players are even complaining about cut-resistant socks. How can you complain about something that could save you from having your tendons severed?
Yeah.
But a hybrid icing call is a no-brainer. And unfortunately, there are way too many no-brain people in those positions.
There are quite a number of people, both players and executives in the NHL, who do not have a functioning brain.
Yes. So, sadly, that's not on the horizon at the NHL level.
I know you've got a couple of things you wanted to talk about.
There's one team in each conference that are blowing my mind right now.
And who are they?
And I don't think I'm alone in this. Rick Ball, I believe, would say, holy shnikes.
That was a good moment, wasn't it?
I'm not a big Chris Farley fan, but it is fun to hear the Hockey Night in Canada announcer say, holy shnikes. That's fun. I like that.
I just enjoy having a Hockey Night in Canada announcer that I can listen to without wanting to drive ice picks into my ear canal.
Yes. It's always nice when Jim Houston does a Canucks game, for example, and certainly people around the Lower Mainland and around BC in general have rejoiced
mm-hmm.
at the removal of Mark Lee from the Hockey Night in Canada broadcasts.
Well, he has not been removed from the broadcasts.
From Canucks games.
Well, from Canucks games, he certainly has, but we at Pucked in the Head would certainly like to extend our condolences to the people of Winnipeg on their inheritance of Mark Lee.
You know what? They're just happy to have a team still.
I guess.
It all balances out, right? So, there you go, Winnipeg. First thing I'd like to talk about, Anaheim Ducks. Holy duck! are these guys for real? Like, Chicago, I understand. You look up and down that roster, and they are a solid team. And they won the Stanley Cup very recently with an incredible group of young players. They're veterans, like Marian Hossa. Good. Like, this is a good team. You expect them to win 20 in a row.
And yet, both of those teams that you mentioned, the Anaheim Ducks and the Chicago Blackhawks, are on a run both of good form, but also of good luck.
Oh, certainly, certainly. But I'm sorry. If you have 50 points over 24 games, you cannot attribute very much of that to luck.
If you have 50 points over 24 games, you can attribute a great deal of it to luck, because that's not mathematically possible.
You know what I mean. The Blackhawks right now have 51 points. Most teams are around the 24-game mark. The Blackhawks right now have 51 points. The Ducks are only a few points behind them. Now, maybe they've played a couple of extra games, but the fact is both of these teams are on amazing runs.
Yes.
And the Ducks are playing well.
The Blackhawks and the Ducks are both playing well. They are also going to come back down to earth at some point. Don't forget the Minnesota Wild of last year.
Okay, but that, wait a minute. That's not a fair comparison.
Why?
Maybe with the Ducks. But the Chicago Blackhawks are a good team.
Sure.
Now, nobody called the Ducks to challenge for the Western Conference.
No.
In fact, very few people picked the Ducks to make the playoffs this year.
And they still may not, but this is one of the effects that is extremely predictable in a shortened season. Last year, the Wild were in December, basically at the halfway point, maybe shortly before that, but roughly the same number of games played as have been played this year.
Right.
They were leading the league.
That's
first
true.
Overall in the NHL.
That's very true.
And they
true.
Ended up finishing, what, third to last in the Western Conference?
Yes, but they had, first of all, a spectacular host of injuries. They also had a spectacular run of poor play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect that from watching the Ducks and the Blackhawks, I get a much different feel from these two teams. Last year, watching Minnesota play, you knew they were going to come back down to earth, and there were a lot of games they won they shouldn't have, and there were games that you just felt like you were wondering, how are these guys leading the league? They were winning 2-1 games and 1-0 games. The Ducks are scoring in bunches. They're a good offensive team. And Ryan Getzlaff is now playing the way Ryan Getzlaff should play.
Now, do you follow the advanced stats trend at all on Twitter?
I pretend to understand what they're talking about.
The simplest of them.
So Corsi is a character on the Jersey Shore, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, the simplest of them is a stat called PDO. It does not mean anything, that abbreviation.
It has something to do with overnight delivery.
It is, very simply, the shooting percentage of a team plus a team's save percentage.
All right.
Both of those stats, save percentage and shooting percentage, have been shown over time to regress to about the average.
For a given team?
For the league.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so, I mean, there is an average shooting percentage. I don't know what exactly the number is.
Once again, we don't
research,
do research.
Yes. Yeah. But since every shot taken has to either go in or be saved, it's either a goal or it's not. Over time, well, I mean, at all times,
right,
the PDO for the entire league is one. Exactly.
Okay.
And so there's quite a bit of evidence that over time, each one of these teams' PDOs will regress towards one. So teams that are significantly under will tend to improve. Teams that are significantly over will tend to come down.
Okay.
Okay. So Minnesota last year, the advanced stats nerds were looking at the Minnesota Wild's PDO and saying, this is not sustainable. They're coming back down to earth. It's a matter of time.
Right. By the way, we respect the stats nerds. That is actually an official term. That's a technical term.
We are also nerds.
Yes.
Not necessarily not stats nerds.
Certainly not stats nerds. But we respect you, stats nerds people.
And you know, they got a good chuckle because they got a ton of hate mail from Minnesota Wild fans saying that, no, just watch the team play. You guys aren't watching the games.
And with good reason.
With good reason. And sure as shit, Minnesota Wild ended up third to last in the Western Conference.
Right. So what are they saying about the Ducks right now?
Similar things, though not as extreme. And I think both Chicago and Anaheim are in the top five in that stat PDO.
Right.
Meaning that they are due for some regression.
Well, certainly. When you've got a team like Chicago that puts on a remarkable run to open the season, I mean, this is a record-setting run to open the season. Of course, they're not going to maintain that pace over 48 games and a playoff. They are going to have a short losing skid here and there. They are going to lose 6-2 or whatever the score was against Edmonton. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. That even happened for the 1977 Montreal Canadiens, who only lost 7 games in an entire year. They did lose 7 games.
Right.
Of course, they're going to come back down to earth to a point. But I don't see either of these teams worried about playoffs at this point, unless there are some catastrophic injuries to their key players or to multiple players. These are two good teams that are going to challenge for the West.
For the Blackhawks, I tend to agree. I don't know that the Ducks are anywhere near the same level. But I mean, while they are blowing your mind, just keep in mind that they are due for a little bit of regression.
It's hard to keep things in mind when it is busy being blown.
Now that leads into something that I want to talk about.
Well, I haven't gotten to the second team yet.
Okay.
The first one was the Ducks. The second one...
You said there were two and you listed Chicago and Anaheim.
No. I said we expected Chicago.
Oh, I see.
We expected Chicago to beat the crap out of people.
I see.
We did not expect Montreal to be leading their division and challenging for the East.
No, we didn't.
Like, it's the same kind of situation. Pittsburgh, we expect Sidney Crosby to put up 2 points a game and be a threat every time he steps on the ice. And it's awesome that he's back.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Vancouver Giants, Brendan Gallagher comes in as an undersized third line forward, and he's in double digits in scoring. Michel Therrien is doing some magical things in his second term as Montreal coach. They were winning even before PK Subban came back. And even after they signed him, there was no sign that this big contract walking in the room has disturbed them at all. They're playing great hockey. They believe they can win every single game. It is a lot of fun to watch. And remember, I grew up hating the Habs with every fiber of my being. They are fun to watch right now.
Maybe it's just a fact that I didn't grow up in an era where I had to watch the Habs all the time, But I've never really hated the Habs. Hate the Leafs? Yeah.
Because they're on every Saturday.
Yeah.
On CBC.
Oilers, I could hate them if they got good again. The Flames, I just pity at this point.
Yeah, they're.
That's... But the Habs, I've got no problem with Montreal being good. Good on them. Here's to a Montreal-Vancouver Stanley
one
Cup.
One more very quick Vancouver Giants heads up. The Heat, the Flames farm team, the Abbotsford Heat, have signed Vancouver Giants defenseman Brett Kulak to an amateur tryout contract.
Oh, good for him.
So, yeah, good for him. He was one of the very few bright spots in the Vancouver Giants season this year. He got 44 points, I think, which is good for a defenseman anyway. Great for a defenseman on a team that was last in the league in scoring.
Right.
He will get a good look in Abbotsford and, you know, good on Brett Kulak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you wanted to talk
about...
Yeah,
you ruined my perfect segue from the apparently statistically overachieving Anaheim Ducks to the Vancouver Canucks, who are, at this point, statistically right where they should be.
Statistically right where they should be as per...
Well, I mean, they're...
The stats nerds?
They are not... according to the stats nerds, they are getting neither lucky nor unlucky at this point. They are right around one.
Right.
And that makes me sad.
That they are where they should be?
Yes.
Given that their Selkie winning forward has yet another injury, given that they lost a couple of their best defensemen to free agency over the last 2 years.
Even when Kessler was in the lineup, they were still very hit and miss.
Well, to be fair, he broke his foot in his first game back.
Oh, and he played through it.
He played through it for a few games.
Of course he did. I'm sorry, I was out of touch for a significant amount of time while I was moving. I was not paying very much attention. And I didn't find out about Kessler's injury until about two games after the fact.
Well, neither did he. Because he took, it wasn't even a shot. It was a clearing attempt in the neutral zone. He took off the foot.
I don't buy that.
What?
That he didn't know.
Well, he just knew.
I'm sorry.
No, come on. It's possible. I have a friend of mine. I'll give you a story. I have a friend of mine who was in a car accident. Okay. And he had a sore neck and shoulders, which is pretty common after a car accident. It wasn't until about 4 weeks later that they found out he had a broken neck. He just thought it was sore.
If you are a professional hockey player, you should be aware of your own body to the point that you are, you know, asking a question after taking a puck hard off the foot, and then it's sore the next day. Okay. You go say, hey, my foot's sore right where I took that puck.
Right.
You think they're gonna go and get an x-ray of that foot immediately. But well, Kessler has had this problem before, where he decides that he's going to keep playing through the pain because he's Mr. Tough Guy, and he ends up hurting his team over it.
Well, it is true that I have a problem with players who take up a roster spot when they're playing at less than 100%.
Mm-hmm.
If they, at less than 100%, are less effective than the replacement guy, they should sit and get better. But in this case, apparently, now I don't know because I am not a podiatrist. The foot has not just the major bones that we know about, but there are some very small, tiny little bones in that foot structure. And apparently this is one of the ones that he has cracked. And it's very common for this to be damaged and the person doesn't realize that it's a fracture or a break. That they just think it's a stinger, like it's going to go away. And it wasn't going away. So they finally, after a few games and a few practices, and there were certain motions of the feet and the skates that were bothering him more than others. So he could put his weight on it in a lot of different situations, but not in this or not in that situation. Finally, they went and had not just an x-ray, but an MRI done on it. And that's when they found that it was indeed broken.
All right, fine.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here because I do agree, get that guy off the ice until he's 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But what if it's something small and nagging? Hockey players play with small nagging injuries all the time.
I guess. I just think that there's enough downtime that they could probably figure out a way to get it diagnosed. But
What kind of downtime do they have this year?
Not a doctor.
This year, 48-game schedule packed into some ridiculous... They're playing 7 games in 10 nights right now. What would they do? Put an MRI machine on the plane?
Sure. How long does an MRI take?
I don't know. All I know is that for an average person like me, it takes 8 months to book one.
Yeah. I don't know.
So what's wrong with the Canucks?
I think they're getting old. I think their good players are getting old and hurt, and they just don't have anybody coming up.
I find it interesting that Henrik Sedin is one of the few players that is scoring goals.
Yeah.
He is offering up some wicked passes for his teammates, but they are very often making the other goaltender look good. And yes, the other night, Alex Burrow scored a goal 6 seconds in on Jimmy Howard. And then just a few minutes later, he had a glorious opportunity from the left faceoff dot, had the shot, even put it upstairs, and Jimmy Howard was on his belly, still got the glove up to make the save. And those are saves that, A, Vancouver's goalies are not making right now.
No.
They were making early in the season. They're not making right now. But, two, goalies are making against Vancouver a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of luck. I mean, sometimes that happens all at once, and sometimes both goalies get hot in the same game. Sometimes both goalies suck in the same game.
But it's happening against the Canucks a lot, is what I'm trying to say. You run up against one hot goaltender, that's fine. But they're running into a lot of excellent goaltending in consecutive games where, like you said the other night against Minnesota, every time you looked up at the TV, as you were watching it at work a little bit,
yep.
Every time you looked up, the Canucks were swarming around the Minnesota net. And yet they were down 2-0 in the third period.
Mm-hmm. And then you get games like St. Louis the very next night, where Canucks got outshot 34-19, and it was in the first and the third period, they were outshot 28-5.
Yeah.
They still pulled out the victory. Those kinds of things even out over the course of the year.
So what you're saying is that the people who are complaining about the Canucks not getting the breaks really ought to relax, because the Canucks are where they should be, according to the stats nerds?
I think that they are just reasonably where they should be. Henrik and Daniel Sedin are no longer 100-point players. They had their 2 years where they were top of the league, and, you know, they're still close to a point a game, just under now. Henrik's got 28 in 29 games, and Daniel's got 27 in 29 games.
Okay, but let's say we change their supporting cast, the way they've played, and we've watched quite a few of their games where the Sedinery was on display, but they didn't wind up in the back of the net. Sorry to channel Craig McEwen there, but it didn't wind up bulging the twine.
Yeah.
The same way it was before, when they had Ryan Kessler scoring 40 goals, when they had Alex Burrow scoring 30 goals. So they just don't have the supporting cast that's helping them out. They don't have Sammy Salo on the power play. They don't have Christian Ehrhoff on the power play. They've got Jason Garrison, who, let's not even count goals. I only remember seeing him take 5 slap shots this year. Because his timing, he just hasn't developed the timing with the Twins on the power play yet.
Alain Vigneault, I think, treats his offensive players oddly.
In what way?
Keith Ballard and Jason Garrison have both been effective at times. Ballard was highly effective last year in a pairing with Chris Tanev, because you get that offensive-defensive pairing. One's hanging back, one's pushing forward, and it works. Garrison, for some reason, is not being used effectively. He's not getting the power play time.
What I also find, though, is that, is it Mike Newell who's the power play coach?
Newell Brown.
Newell Brown, as the power play coach, has developed this umbrella system where you've basically got 2 forwards up on the up high on the boards. You've got Alex Edler in the middle on the point. You've got 2 guys down low. Very often they're in the corners. They're not even in front of the net.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big problems is you know Henrik Sedin is not going to shoot the puck from the point. The only option he's got is to pass off, or to look for maybe a slap pass, maybe. But he's not going to shoot the puck. He doesn't have a cannon back there. Sometimes they've had Jordan Schrader back there. But this is not a power play point threat. The teams know that all we need to do is key on Edler as far mm-hmm. as the shot goes, and then box out the forwards down low.
So you think that they need to just change up the system?
They totally need to change up the system. That umbrella system is horrible. Unless you have 5 players that are always moving. And right now, the Canucks are not always moving.
They're not. And you know what, though? That's not the extent of the problem. Jordan Schrader, he is nothing if not an offensive player.
So why is he on the point?
More importantly, why are you sending him down to Chicago when you've got trouble scoring? Why is Zach Cassian fighting? Why is he not being used as a power forward?
Well, and I think part of that is his youth. I think he's young, and I think he's making dumb decisions. I mean, he sat out two games with back problems, and then he goes, and he feels better, so he starts throwing roundhouse rights at people. Well, of course you're going to hurt your back again. That's just dumb. That was dumb. And I don't think that's the coach saying, hey, Zach, go out and beat somebody up. I think that's just him being dumb.
All right. Well, by the way, my question to you.
A little aside, Zach Cassian may be the ugliest Canuck in the new millennium, I'll say. He may be the ugliest Canuck since Millennium Eve. Zach Cassian, ugliest Canuck.
All right.
Maybe that's a top seven list we can do sometime.
Top seven ugliest Canucks. Yeah. I like it. So my question to you, is the window closed?
I mean, I think the core is still a very good one. I think our top line is as good as any top line in the league when you've got both Sedins and Burrows when they play with passion.
Mm-hmm.
I think their secondary scoring has dried up for the most part. The second line doesn't even exist. So their third line has moved to the second line. Mason Raymond scoring, that's nice.
Let's just take all the injuries off the table for right now.
So if Ryan Kessler's healthy, for
example? Yeah, you got a second line of Kessler, Booth, and Raymond.
Well, that's not the best second line in the league. I don't think David Booth is an effective top six forward. I think he's a bottom six guy.
Well, yeah, I guess maybe he is at this point. Certainly pre-concussion, he was a top six guy.
Sure, but that was 4 years ago. And that was something we discussed when he first came here.
Yeah, and there have been rumblings, and, you know, when rumblings come from Bob McKenzie, there's some truth to them, that the Canucks might be targeting Booth as a compliance buyout at the end of this year.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, I don't know if they're allowed to do that if he's injured. I don't know how that works.
Mm.
But I do know that there are some limitations as to what you can do with buyouts and various things when a player is on long-term injured reserve.
Right.
But again, if someone's on long-term injured reserve, then their salary is off the books for the cap anyway. What they would have to do is wait for him to get better and then immediately buy him out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he is not worth the money that they've spent on him.
No, not at this point.
The good thing that I have enjoyed seeing is both Yannick Hansen and Mason Raymond are both playing well.
Mm-hmm.
Mason Raymond looks like he's back to the form where he scored 25 goals a couple years ago. Much like Sidney Crosby, I applaud him for coming back after an atrocious injury. Wow. He's playing very well, and I like what I see from Mason Raymond this year. Yannick Hansen and Henrik Sedin are my two favorite Canucks this year.
Yeah.
Yannick Hansen has been one of the most consistent players on this Canucks team this season. He has been lights out, I think.
Yeah. You look at the Canucks, and some of their guys that are just entering their prime are decent. They'll be quality second or third line players. And when you look at where you got those players from, I mean, Mason Raymond was a lower round draft pick. Yannick Hansen, I think he was a second rounder.
I think so.
You know, they've got guys like Tanev that they're pulling out of the Rochester Institute of Technology.
Speaking of which, they've also now signed another fellow from the college ranks.
Okay. Yeah, same college, I think.
Kesson Lane. And he's 6'6" forward.
Oh, wow.
And he's not afraid to fight, but he's just apparently a really good face-off man. Well, think about it. How would you do in a face-off with someone who's 6'6"?
I don't know.
Well, if he leans in on you,
I guess,
and he's taller than you are when you're standing up.
I can't skate, so I don't think that.
Well, let's get past that for a second, shall we? But seriously, that kind of size, 6'6", really? That's something the Canucks don't have.
That is true.
It's a menacing size that puts the fear of stink into forwards.
I guess. Can he skate?
Apparently.
And if he can skate, then great. If he can't skate, then he's nothing more than John Scott.
He's not going to win the fastest skater competition, but apparently this guy's got some hands.
Good.
As well.
When I look at what the Canucks have in 3 or 4 years' time, as it stands right now, I am whelmed.
So do you think the Sedins re-up at the end of their contract?
Oh, I don't know. Even if they do?
Let's just say, do you think they re-up? Or do they go the way of Marcus Naslund and they end up playing out the string for perhaps too much money in New York or someplace like that?
I think that they will finish their careers as Canucks. I don't know if there is another contract for them.
Really? When they're point-a-game guys?
Yeah, and how many more years do they have? Two? Three?
I think they're up in 2014-15 is their last season, I think.
Okay, so two more years. That I think that's right. And they will be, what, 35, 36?
Something like that.
Yeah. There are a couple of guys I could see them retiring rather than going elsewhere.
Hmm. Think maybe they'll go home, play for Modo, take their families back to Sweden?
Yeah, maybe. Hmm. They've got a couple of good pieces. Obviously, Connaughton coming up on defense. They're gonna have a good defensive core for quite a long time. But they're not going to have that really top-end guy that I can see unless they go out and sign him.
Does Mike Gillis try to swing for the fences and go for a guy like Jeff Carter?
I don't know if Jeff Carter is going for the fences.
As far as free agents go. And he's tough.
I guess.
Tough as nails. He's the kind of player that they don't have, especially when Kessler's injured.
I don't think that they have any choice but to aggressively pursue free agents. But I don't know that that's enough. The path to success in this league has been for a long time. Suck, draft well, be good. That's how the Canucks did it.
Okay, but what about Detroit? Detroit's still good.
Detroit, they're very much an outlier. Nobody else has ever done what Detroit's done.
This is the model that Mike Gillis said he wanted to pattern right. Canucks after.
But unless you can find Pavel Datsyuk playing in some men's league in the middle of Siberia and draft him in the 13th round, I mean...
This is what they're doing. They're aggressively going after the college markets.
Yeah.
That's one of Stan Smeal's main jobs is trolling the college leagues for undrafted players.
Sure.
Which is something the Canucks have never done before. They've also got guys in Denmark. Didn't they just sign a Danish player that is supposed to be the next Yannick Hansen?
Yes.
So but
they don't need that. They don't need the next Yannick Hansen.
They need the next Pavel Datsyuk.
Yes.
But Pavel Datsyuk is a special case. I mean, I don't think that, like you said, that's an outlier. That's not something that you go out and find on a regular basis.
No, it's not. The regular path is you suck, then you draft Malkin and Crosby in consecutive years, and then you go win a Stanley Cup.
Or you suck. Taylor Hall, Ryan Nuzer, and Hopkins,
yeah.
And those guys.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the flip side, right? If you don't draft well. Well, no, like Edmonton got Taylor Hall instead of Tyler Seguin. I think they'd want that back.
Taylor Hall's not a bad hockey player.
It's not bad, but...
It's not like they drafted somebody who is a complete bust. Taylor Hall's an elite player. You don't think he's going to be an elite player?
Very good player. I don't know if he's ever going to be elite.
Well, now we're talking semantics.
Yes.
He's an incredibly good hockey player.
I don't know that he ever gets to 100 points a game or a year.
I don't know if you'd ever say that Seguin is elite.
No, I think Seguin's better than Hall, though.
Edmonton's got a really good group of youngsters.
Yeah.
And they're even starting to win some of those games.
Sure.
Okay, here's one last surprise before we top it up.
All right.
Columbus.
Yeah.
Scratching at the door.
Not bad.
Points in 12 consecutive games. Post Rick Nash. They're more likely to make the playoffs than the Rangers right now.
Are they really?
Well, the way they're playing.
Hmm. Good for them. You get rid of one guy that A, doesn't want to be there, and B, teams can just focus on and shut down. And you get two or three good pieces that plug some holes in your lineup. And
well, not hey, just Presto. One guy, Jeff Carter. They got rid of him, too.
Yeah, they got rid of him, too.
They brought in Jack Johnson.
They didn't get Carter from the Rangers.
No, they got Carter from L.A.
Right, but what I'm saying is that Nash trade was a good one for them because they got a couple of guys that were quality players that filled holes right. In their roster.
I would argue the same thing with Jeff Carter, getting Jack Johnson. Right? Yes, Jeff Carter has been scoring some pretty big goals for L.A. so far this year, but... Jack Johnson is a stud on the blue line and will be for a long time. And he's the kind of guy that sells jerseys.
I don't know that he's that good, really.
I think he's a better piece for Columbus than Carter was.
Well, yeah, because he hasn't said that he wants to leave yet, which automatically makes him a better fit for Columbus than Jeff Carter.
All right. Anything else?
No. I think I'm good.
I think it's awesome that we discussed the Vancouver Canucks at length and did not one time dip our toes into the goaltending controversy.
And now you've brought it up.
And I think that's awesome.
Yes.
Well done. Well, thank you very much, Chris. It went a little bit long today, but
yeah.
It's good. It means we had something to say for once.
You will have some editing to do.
I will have a lot of editing to do, which means this podcast will probably go live sometime in June.
All right. Some old couch in the lane. I heard the drunken voices dragging on some old refrain, but I-
train. I can explain if you'll just let me speak plain. I've got to sit and wait for my mouth to catch up to my brain. Time is spinning clockwise down the drain. Come back to me soon, because I'll soon be out of range. I'm feeling able as Cain. I'll only take these for pain. Broke out of rehab just like a happy nap by my train. Don't you worry, I'll see you back here again. Familiar terrain, I'm firing melon balls from cannons on the Spanish main, but I'm alright. It's just a red wine stain. It's all too normal now, where once it seemed so strange. Time for a construction crane, and I'm tearing up the rules to the game. Now the moon's on the wane, I'm feeling slightly more sane. I'm riding shotgun with my stuntman, and we're ready for fame, but I'm losing my grip on the reins. It's all too normal now, and once it seems so strange, time for
it's always good to be here, because not being here is not a good option.
Who says that?
I don't know if anyone's ever said that before.
Well, someone has now, but... Yes.
Did I mention I'm out of practice?
You are.
Yes.
I think you're actually trying to be out of practice right now.
You give me far too much credit, I believe. Now, I don't know, because I am not a podiatrist. I'm not a pediatrician either, but I'm not a podiatrist, by the way, for our listeners. Podiatrist, foot doctor, pediatrician, child doctor. Two very different things. I made that mistake once. I had a foot ailment. I went to a pediatrician, and they looked at me funny.
Did you really?
I did.
That's hilarious.
Yes. Pedestrian. It's not pedestrian. It's pedestrian. Ped, pedal, a pedal on a bike. Ped means foot. Biped means 2 feet. Quadruped means four. I took science classes. So pediatrician makes sense. Foot doctor. Anyway, that was a long time ago. I now know the difference. I'm just trying to help our listeners. Because I'm like that.
I'm sure they appreciate it.
I'm like that.
Go on.
I don't remember what I was saying earlier, so I can't continue. I might not know the difference between pod and ped in doctors, But I know how to count, mister.
Huzzah!